Good morning. Happy Valentine's Day. You know, I was super excited last week because we had like a ton of people here. And I've been praying. I've never prayed regularly for the church to grow. This is a year for me. I'm praying for the church to grow. So pray with me. I don't know what that looks like. I've been praying every week over every seat in here. And I've been praying every seat filled, every person healed, that God has created this space, and I don't know what that's about. I've been praying it since Thanksgiving. So last week, I was like, wow, this is some growth, and then we went tiny this morning. But that's okay, right? Right, you're here, I'm here. More importantly, God is here. We're in a series called I Am Amazing. We're going to be in Hosea chapter 1, and then we're going to be over in Romans. So Hosea chapter 1, and then over in Romans. Last week, I shared on how you are amazing because you are his dwelling place. I hope every one of you caught that you are his dwelling place, what that means, what that looks like. This morning, we're going to explore how you are amazing because you are his. How you are amazing because you are his. That's pretty simple, right? I am his, therefore I am amazing. But it's not that simple because of our brokenness, because of our hiddenness, because of our shame, because we hide from each other with fig leaves, and we hide from God in the forest, it keeps us wrongly admiring how others are good, but putting shame on ourselves. Wishing we could be like somebody else and have what they have and do what they do and have the happiness that they have or the life that they have, but then keeping shame on ourselves and denying that it's powerful or that we're amazing because we are his. There's also some wrong thinking in this idea that God never shares his glory. And I'm going to tell you, God created you, and God created you in his image, and he looked at you. Say, he looked at me. He looked at me. Say, it. Say God looked at me. There you go. God looked at you and he said, man, not only good, but super good, wow. And we think of that, he did that with Adam and Eve, but he does that with us. He looks at us and he goes, wow, better than the Rocky Mountains, better than the Alps, better than the Hawaiian Islands, more beautiful, more perfect, more serving, and more able to express my glory and to express how I was made and to express my personality than all of those other things I created. We're pretty amazing. So there's something there. There's a shame. There's a wrong teaching. There's a false humility that keeps us away from identifying how we're amazing. But first, we've got to say, I am amazing. You're amazing, and you were created to do something. And you were born again to do something. Okay? And it's not something that you just barely get through with sadness and death. It's something that you do, that you love to do, and you love being that person once you discover who you're supposed to be, once you begin walking in that. And you're amazing because you're his. But what does that look like? The first thing I want to talk about is I am amazing because I am his love. I want you to see that. I am amazing not because I am loved, like a distance. I am amazing because I am God's love. I am amazing because I am his love. It's different than when I look at somebody, when I look at LaDonna today and say, I love you. It's different when I say, look at Christian and say, she is my love. It's completely different. A lot of us get this, God throws out the that he loves us, but we don't get this identity, this personal deep thing that I am his love. I am his Juliet to Romeo. I am his Kate Winslet to Leonardo DiCaprio on the Titanic, ranked one of the top 10 most romantic movies ever, which I hated, okay? Now I like Leonardo now that he's gained 50 pounds, got some wrinkles, and looks like a man and not a man child. Now I like him. But there's a difference. There's a difference in saying I love you and you are my love. Krisha is my love. I can love other people, but she is my love. And it identifies her that I love her in that way and that she is my love. In Hosea, in chapter 1, verse 1, we have a very rated R story here where God sends his prophet, his mouthpiece, his pastor to go marry a promiscuous woman, to go marry a prostitute. So you start with verse 1, we're going to read 10 verses. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, son of Beeri, during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the reign of Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, first thing we know, when God begins to speak to you, it's first to you, always to you. Not to your spouse, not to your kids, not for them, but to you. Because you are his love, and he's the one, he's concerned about you first when he's talking to you. Go marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. So he married Gomer. She's a prostitute is one strike, but her name is Gomer is another strike, isn't it? I mean, that would be, hi, my name's Bob and Gomer, or Hosea and Gomer. So he married Gomer, daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said to Hosea, call him Jezreel, because I will soon punish the house of Jehu for the massacre at Jezreel. And I will put an end to the kingdom of Israel. In that day I will break Israel's bow in the valley of Jezreel. Gomer conceived again and gave birth to a daughter. Then the Lord said to Hosea, call her Lo-Ruhamah, which means not loved. Wow. These are tough names. We're going to talk a little bit about the names later on. For I will no longer show love to Israel that I should at all forgive them. Yet I will show love to Judah, and I will save them not by bow, sword, or battle, or by horses and horsemen, but I, the Lord their God, will save them. After she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, Gomer had another son. Then the Lord said, call him Lo-Ammi, which means not my people, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. Yet the Israelites will be like the sand on the seashore, which cannot be measured or counted. In the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, they will be called children of the living God. Now, God tells his prophet to marry a prostitute, not just to be loving towards the prostitute, but to make the prostitute his. There's a difference than going and ministering to a group of people and making that group of people yours. So God doesn't look at us and just say, I'm going to love you. He says, I'm going to make you mine. And that makes us amazing. What the one who loves us tells us about us is that we have some value beyond who we are and what we can give. So I want you to I want you to see the picture of these three kids. The son, the first son is called Get Out of Here, roughly translated. The daughter is called You're Not Loved. The second son, the third child, is called You're Not Mine. And an addendum, I'm Not Yours. How's that for naming your three kids? This is what your union has produced. This is what God's union with us has produced. It's produced wayward children. It's produced people, a love that we keep squandering and running away from him, but he keeps saying, not only do I love you, but you are mine. I'm amazing, you're amazing, because you are his. Just like Gomer is amazing because she is Hosea's. She is amazing. Now, does she think she's amazing? Does she feel amazing? I mean, how's that for a love story? It's a love story that I don't want to be a part of. Who wants to be a part of that love story? So I'm like, this is why I don't want to be a part of that love story. Because I'm assuming in that love story I would be Hosea and not the prostitute. All of us in our gospel story are part of this story, but we're not in the part of Hosea. We're in the part of Gomer. We're the harlot. We're the prostitute. We're the hooker. We're the whore. We get saved. And he loves us while we are yet in our sin. And he loves us while we are useless to him. He loves us even while we are opposing him. And it says something about Gomer that God and Hosea would go after Gomer. She doesn't believe it, though. She doesn't think she's amazing. In fact, she comes in and she has these three kids, and she goes out and prostitutes herself again in this story. And Hosea goes and he buys her back from the guy she's prostituting for. And Jesus comes and he buys us and he keeps offering himself over and over and over again to us. And we become amazing. Now, what kind of woman gets sought after? A wealthy person's daughter, a wealthy person's wife, a famous person, a king, a queen's daughter, but not definitely not a prostitute, definitely not a woman of the streets. But that's what makes her, there's some value on her that God sees on her that nobody else gets. And that makes her amazing. Not what she's done or hasn't done, not what, how she can do things or what she cannot do, not how far she's fallen or how far she's risen. It's because God looks at her and says, "You are mine." And he's looking at us and he's saying, "You are mine. You are mine." And what we do, we go, "No, I'm not clean enough. No, I'm not worthy enough. No, I'm not good enough. No, you don't know what I did yesterday. You know, you don't know how I feel about myself. No, you don't know that I have doubt about you. You don't know that I'm bored with reading your scripture. You don't know these things." And we push away from their very one that keeps wanting to draw us in and say, "You are mine and I am yours." And we deny that we're his when we hide from him. When we put on falsity in front of our friends, in front of our brothers and sisters in Christ, when we put on religious garment in front of others or before God, and we posture ourselves before him like the Pharisees did, saying, "Oh my God, thank you so much, like I'm not like this woman over here." And we do that often with the prostitute or with the drug addict or with other people. We say, "Thank God I'm not like them," forgetting the joy of our salvation that we were once in our hearts just like them. And so we're amazing because we are his love. And you're his love whether you think you are or not. You're his love whether you go back out and prostitute yourself or not. You're his love, and that's amazing. We should be going, "Woohoo!" But instead, we're just like, "I'm lovable. I'm good at stuff. Look, I go to church." There's something deeper that we miss in this gospel story that we've got to get, that we are a wreck without him. And our value is not placed in who we know, what we can do, how much we have. Our value is in place in whose we are and the one who says, "You are mine. You are my child, you are my bride, you are my friend." It's "you are" statements. It's actually possessive statements. I heard a guy the other day that said nobody, when they talk about the names of God, they say, "You know, I am God the healer." They never say, "I am God the jealous one." And how powerful that jealousy that God has towards us is, that he doesn't want to share us with anybody because we are his. So say this to yourself: "I am amazing because I am his." Look at your neighbor and say, "You're amazing because you are his." Cresha, you're amazing because you are his. Thank you. By the way, don't raise your hands, but how many of you went home after last Sunday and looked at your spouse in the eyes and said, "You are amazing"? Good for you. Some of you did. Some are like, "Wait, I forgot." That's what we talked about. Listen to last week's. Go look. What would change if somebody told you every morning you're amazing? Not you're amazing because you did this, not because you're amazing you did that, because you're in my life and you're my love and I love you with your kids, with your spouse. You are amazing. So you're amazing because you are his love. That's the foundation of the gospel message that we lose out on when we think, when we think anything else will get us to where we need to be. I'm amazing. The guy on the street, he's amazing. The drug addict is amazing. The person who hates God, by the way, they are amazing because God is pursuing them with a great passion. That's amazing. That's amazing grace. Mike did communion a few months ago, and he talked about hyper grace and how what I got out of it was somebody wrote a book on why hyper grace is bad, and Mike's like, "I want some." Hyper grace, it's like this radical, almost unbelievable, and the phrase I get out of it, it's ridiculous that anybody would ever offer me this deal. But that he offers me this deal shows how amazing I am. It's like if you need a car and you go down and some guy walks up to you and he offers you a deal that says, you know what, give me $100 and you can drive off with this car that's worth $35,000. That would say something about you if they did that. And God does that for us and with us and to us all the time. I am his love is foundationally deeper than I am loved. And when we hear I am loved, we often think of 2,000 years ago I was loved. And then when I die, I'll be loved. You know, the greatest love story of all time is probably Romeo and Juliet, which ends in tragedy. The good news is ours doesn't end in tragedy. Because we have this at John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And that giving, that loving, does something huge within us. It breaks something. It restores something. It heals something. It births something. All at the same time. It's not just acted out 2,000 years ago. It's not just something we look forward to in the future when we die. It's right now. God's saying to you and me right now, you are mine. You are mine. You are mine. We've got to get that like down and then be loved by him and be loving to others.